Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 214 of Frightmares. I am your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me across the table, we have Spencer Lafferman.
What's up?
Always the very casual, very discreet hello. It's nice to have you back. We're talking about Elvira, Mistress of the Dark today from 1988. I'm very excited for this one. I'd watch this one. Oof, man. I think the first time I watched this, okay, March 9th, 2022. So just over a year ago.
Mine was the first time last year too, but in October. When Cassandra Patterson was doing a thing for
Peterson.
Peterson, sorry.
Peterson.
I say it all the time. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right, but I'm too dumb to correct myself, so I'm just like, whatever.
You just crossed over Robert Pattinson and
I mean, two beautiful people. You can't go wrong.
They both sparkle in their own way.
I was gonna say, like, one's like Mister of the Dark because he's Batman, so like Mister. Yeah. So you know.
And he was a sparkly vampire. Exactly. So
oh, fuck that guy. I'm just the sparkly vampire guy.
Fuck that Patterson.
But yeah, so Shudder was doing a little like Elvira's like top five movies or whatever. Like,
oh, nice.
And that was one of them, and I've never seen it before, so I watched it. And she was actually, it was like a live hosting, and then she'd do the movie.
Okay.
And then after the movie, she would do a little like her commentary, like she does a little bit throughout the movie in Mistress of the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So my first time was last year in October, and I fucking loved it.
I loved it too. And upon rewatching, I actually enjoyed it even more than I did the first time.
Nice, nice.
So I gave it a higher rating than I did the first time. So
yeah, mine was the same rating.
Okay.
But still.
We'll have to see what that is later. I think I know what it is, but I'm not sure. Because usually we're the same, but I don't know. Maybe this one will be different. But yeah, Elvira, it's a good time. I'm very excited to talk about this one. And I was already like, you know, I was already excited to do it because the theme this month is Arrow Video August. We're doing all titles that Arrow has released. And I picked this one because I knew that me and you watched it like around the same, or, you know, like within the same year, and we both loved it. So I was like, this is on tap for August because it's just so fun. But yeah, I really enjoyed it again, like even more upon this watch. So we will get to that momentarily. You know us, though. We got to do some horror news. And there's actually a good bit of news this week, starting with The Exorcist Believer is now officially rated R. Thank Christ. I was worried it was going to be PG-13. I'm just saying.
I mean, I was, but I wasn't, because if you honestly, I would have believed Halloween being more PG-13 than The Exorcist, even though, because, you know, so we haven't gotten, like, 12 different like
Exorcist movies.
Yeah. And I'm using Halloween because the people that are working on Exorcist worked on the Halloween trilogy.
Correct, yes.
So that's why I'm using that specifically. But, you know, since 1978, we've had Halloween movies like every couple of years up until, what, last year? Year before?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest gap was between 2007 and 2018. That was 11 years. And I think that was the biggest gap.
And The Exorcist one has a total of four movies. Three or four?
I know. Well, there's
the first three and then the beginning, which is the prequel.
I think that's the one from 2005.
Okay, so there's like three or four, but still, like,
yeah.
2005 may be the last time we got that.
That's 18 years ago.
That's a long fucking.
That's almost two fucking decades.
So the fact that, like, most of the demographic for The Exorcist are going to probably be adults anyways, I believe this was going to be more rated R. I mean, there was always a chance it's going to be PG-13 these days.
Well, and especially since it was Blumhouse, I was kind of worried because, you know, we just talked about how Five Nights at Freddy's is PG-13.
Which, I mean, to grab a gamer audience, like, I get it, but also that's one of many downfalls of the Assassin's Creed movie. So you have a game that's rated M, which essentially is rated R, but for games, and then you give it a PG-13 rating, which is fine. Like, I was okay with it until I saw the movie and realized how shitty it was.
There was an Assassin's Creed movie?
Yeah.
Where the fuck was I?
Michael Fassbender was the main guy.
What?
It's not a good movie. Don't watch it.
Assassins.
Assassin's Creed. Yeah, it came
Assassin's
out. I forgot when it came out.
Creed.
It wasn't very good.
2016.
I was going to say 13.
Oh, so it's got a 2.0.
Yeah, it's not good.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not good.
Ooh, it's on Apple TV. Maybe I'll give it a go and see how bad it is.
It's pretty bad.
I do love a bad movie every now and again, I will say.
Yeah,
so.
But it's not so that bad. Kind of bad. It's not like Sharknado bad.
Oh, so it's not like bad good. It's bad bad.
It's bad bad.
It's bad bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those to where you want to curse the filmmakers for making it bad. Like, I don't blame Fassbender because he just acted in it.
You can't
blame everyone around that. You gotta blame
the creative team. And speaking of blaming the creative team, let's talk about the people behind this movie. Because Scott Teams is fucking writing this Exorcist movie.
He's like, well, I wouldn't say 0 for 4. I'd say 1 for like 4. Because how...
He wasn't involved in Ends. If that's
No, yeah, no, but...
It was Kills, Firestarter, And Insidious Red Door.
He's 0 for 3. Damn
yeah,
it.
I was going to say.
Okay, I was trying to be good about it.
Yeah.
Even though I
How many fucking franchises is this man going to fucking ruin?
All of them.
All of them. Stop it.
Now, but it's crazy that the Insidious Red Door is performing a lot better than people have projected it.
It's the best performing one beside or behind the second one, I think.
Which makes sense because the second one was great.
Second one's my favorite.
But it's still not great movie.
Yeah, we're going to watch it tomorrow. Will and Brandon are coming over, and we're going to watch the newest one because me and Gabby are watching the other four to just make sure we're caught up. I mean, really, we only need to watch the first two.
You only need to watch the first two,
but we're just she hasn't seen the three and four in a while, and I'm like,
might as well,
Three is good. I love three.
Three as a prequel is very solid, but four is garbage.
Adam Robitel couldn't even save that movie. I love him. Great film director. You know, Escape Room, Tournament of Champions. Taking of Deborah Logan, fantastic filmmaker. Not even he could save that movie. I don't blame him. I blame the studios. So,
yeah, it wasn't very good.
So yeah, for the first time since 2005, a new Exorcist movie will be in theaters this year, just in time for Halloween. Director David Gordon Green, the man behind the most recent Halloween trilogy, is bringing us The Exorcist Believer as part of a brand new trilogy connected to one of the most beloved horror movies in history. While the jury is still out on the movie itself, Green and Universal Pictures pulled precisely no punches as the film has officially been rated R by the MPAA, double A.
I think it's MPA now.
Oh, is it just MPA?
Yeah, they changed it.
They fucked that last day off. And
they're like, fuck you, A.
Green's Exorcist sequel, which brings back Ellen Burstyn as Chris McNeil, MacNeil, for the first time since 1973, is rated R for some violent content, disturbing images, language, and sexual references.
To be honest, that's probably what I would have guessed the original was rated R for.
Probably, yeah. Attempting to pull back on violence, disturbing imagery, or even sexual references would feel like kneecapping the process a bit. Fortunately, the studio let Green and the folks at Blumhouse do what needed to be done. And here's a little synopsis for anyone who's not up to date with what's going on. Since the death of his pregnant wife in a Haitian earthquake 12 years ago, Victor Fielding, played by Leslie Odom Jr., has raised their daughter Angela, played by Lydia Jewett, on his own. But when Angela and her friend Catherine, played by Olivia Markham, disappear in the woods, only to return 3 days later with no memory of what happened to them, it unleashes a chain of events that will force Victor to confront the nadir of evil and, in his terror and desperation, seek out the only person alive who has witnessed anything like it before, Chris McNeil.
So this is a legit sequel to the original.
Correct. This is like, he's literally doing to Halloween what he's literally doing.
Except he's not going to like retcon and forget that this, he'll probably like with two, because I know this is also going to be a trilogy, so I don't think he's going to fuck off the other ones, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. Very glad that it is rated R. Still a little hesitant because Scott Teams is 0-3. Well, I don't know yet. I still haven't seen Red Door, but
for me, he's 0-3.
That doesn't
like
bode
I'm not.
Well.
I'm not saying I didn't like Insidious Red Door.
It could have been better.
I liked it for it being the last. Potentially the last one, because who knows these days with money.
I mean, especially with how much it made, I guarantee
it made a lot more than I expected.
Well, there's going to be a spinoff with Kumail Nanjiani and Mandy Moore.
That's fine.
Yeah,
spinoffs are fine.
That's a spinoff.
That's
so
a spinoff. I don't count that.
This might be the last one in like the.
I just thought it was very underwhelming. But by the time it ended, you're just underwhelmed by what happened personally.
Because Insidious is a pretty awesome franchise.
And you know, one and two always like ended with like, holy shit, I want more. Where this was like, I don't even care if I get more.
I don't really know if I need any more.
Like I liked it better than The Last Key, but that's really not saying much either.
That's not saying much because
that wasn't very good.
It wasn't a good movie.
Like I feel like if they just did like Insidious 1, 2 and Red Door being 3 and then did the two prequels, 3 might have been better. Like quote-unquote Red Door might have been better. I just feel like with certain movies, when you take too long in between sequels, they're not as good.
That's what I'll figure out this weekend when I watch Red Door, and I'll have my own opinion.
Is Red Door already out?
Well, it's the $19.99 rental. We're just going to rent it.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow, that came out quick for it being successful in theaters.
It's it's a $20 rental, which we're just like I said, Will and Brandon are coming over.
You got five or six of you. That's fine.
Yeah, we're just, he's like, we'll pay for it. I'm like, all right, whatever. So
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. So
and you
like,
could probably check it out in 4K versus, it's not getting a 4K physical. So like if you watch it digital, usually they give you that option.
The best option.
So that's kind of a win.
So next episode, I will have an opinion on that. And so we'll Gabby when she comes back in September, because I gave her 2 months off because she deserves it for having a baby. Next up on the horror news, hold on to your junk, a Street Trash remake is coming. Great news for you trash fans, a remake of the gross and gory horror comedy Street Trash is coming from Fried Berry's Ryan Krueger. Cineverse, Bloody Disgusting, Screambox, and Genre Titans Vinegar Syndrome are teaming up to give the 1987 cult classic a reboot for the modern day, introducing a whole new generation to the gloopy world of melt movies. Street Trash follows a group of homeless midfits as they fight for survival when they discover a plot to exterminate every homeless person in the city. Variety reports that Krueger's reboot will stay true to the plot, but also expound the gore to create a metaphor for something much larger, says Krueger. Our reimagining of Street Trash takes place in Cape Town, South Africa, where the growing divide between rich and poor has changed the world as we know it. I was a huge fan of the original Street Trash when I was a kid, and I couldn't be more thrilled to introduce a whole new generation to the melted gonzo goodness that made the original such a classic. Cast details for the remake are still under wraps, with Krueger teasing, while our reimagining features new, exciting plot elements that give the film many bizarre twists and turns, the core of the film lies with our diverse and unique cast of characters. As a director, I am very character-centric and cannot wait to see our strange and hilarious ensemble on screen together as they navigate the hostile streets of Cape Town. Our version of Street Trash will be raw, hilarious, packed with vibrant characters, and multicolored explosions of gooey greatness. Bloody Disgusting also reports that the production is currently underway in various locations around Cape Town, South Africa, for the film that is entirely shot on 35mm. Nice. It is nice to see fucking directors and filmmakers still shooting movies on 35mm. I love that. Now, I know me and you, we did not like Fried Berry. Was not a fan of it.
Yeah.
Watched it together. I think we both gave it 2 stars.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was not a good time. And it has like a 2.9, I think. Like, it's got some pretty good ratings. I don't know if maybe we just weren't in the mood for that type of movie, but I remember thoroughly...
It was tough for us to keep going with it.
And I believe there was a lot of hanging dong, which normally I don't care about, but... I'm pretty sure there was a lot of penises, and I was like, the amount of, 2.9, and I gave it a 2. But, like, the amount of dongs that I'm seeing on screen is a little too much for my liking. I don't care if you throw 1 or 2 or whatever, but, like, holy crap, why are there so many penises?
The only time that I wouldn't say acceptable, but the only time that I'm not uncomfortable, the only time that I'm okay with excessive amount of dong on screen is Jackass, because... There's just a bunch of dudes for an hour and a half just hitting each other in the dong.
They blur it out, too.
Not always.
Not always. Yeah, not
all. I mean, we watched the last one in Dolby, and there was dong all up in that thing.
Oh, that's right. On TV, they blur it out.
Yeah, but the movies, they don't. There's dong everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... And this is one that I was so like attracted to the plot description, because it was like about how an alien takes over this guy. And
so, like, in a weird way, it's like a lower budget version of Nope.
It's just a more indie version.
Indie version of Nope.
Nope. Because I was gonna say the production value was pretty good for what it was. But yeah, that's one I was not a fan of. Now, and you know, I hate to say this to the entire world, but I've never seen Street Trash, the original.
I've never even heard of it until today.
I know what it is and I know what it's about, but I've never seen it. So obviously I'm going to have to watch that before I see this one.
Yeah, it sounds like he's going to do the fans a service. So it's something we should probably yes. check out first.
Yeah. So, and I want to check this out, because it's not that I didn't like the director. I just wasn't a fan of Fried Berry. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it happens.
That doesn't mean I won't like something else that he's done, but, that's exciting, because I know Street Trash is a beloved movie and the B movie category of the horror genre. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, now this is my sign to finally watch Street Trash, because I've heard about it for so long. So next up here, we've got A24's Talk to Me summons a sequel with Talk to Me.
Clever.
I know. Fucking bastards. And again, all this comes from Fangoria. That's where I get all my horror news.
I mean, Talk to Me made... a very good amount of money opening weekend, and it's pretty much stayed really well with ratings. So
it literally, I watched it from the time it was like from the time before it hit theaters until after, and it was at a 3.7, then it went to a 3.8, and then it went back down to 3.7.
Oh, it's still at a 3.7.
And it's still at a 3.7.
And honestly, right now, because of the strike and everything, A24 is really the only production company that's granted to keep making films, because they pay their shit,
mm-hmm.
which I'm okay with, because they come out with bangers.
They really do. So in today's hardly surprising but extremely exciting news, Danny and Michael Philip Howell's A24 mega hit Talk to Me is officially getting a sequel. As if that news wasn't great enough, the sequel is entitled Talk Again 2. Letter or number two, me.
Letter two.
This news comes just days after the announcement that the brothers, also known by their YouTube handle Raka Raka, have already shot a Screen Life style prequel that focuses on the character Duckett from the beginning of Talk to Me's cold open. Unsettling cold open.
Oh, such a good movie, though. That movie is so good.
That cold open, me and Gabby were just like, oh, yeah, it's A24.
I didn't expect that either at first. Like, oh, shit. Like,
holy
okay.
shit.
But the fact that they want to explore more with that, like up to that, I'm totally for. Honestly, I would prefer a prequel than a sequel, but if they could do something different. Because the one thing that the one thing that kind of like, about on certain things is when sequels do the same premise just with different actors and maybe tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because essentially you're seeing the same thing, which with certain movies, sure, I don't care, like Halloween, and Friday the 13th, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting into.
You want to see people get
murdered.
But
this movie
murdered.
Was so like unique that I want to see a little of the same, but more of something different. Regardless if it's a prequel or a sequel, the prequel to me is more enticing than the sequel to me.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll be there for both.
Yeah, and it's the fact that they already have this filmed. It's like already filmed. All they have to do
is they probably shot that to convince to make the feature length. To be honest, because it's a lot of the Wachowski sisters or siblings or whatever.
It's the Wachowski sisters.
Okay, I was not really sure if they've changed anything. I haven't been up on that.
It's Lana and Lily, I think. Wachowski.
Okay. But like for the Matrix, they spent $10 million just to do the opening sequence. To convince Warner Brothers to make the rest of the movie. So they spent $10 million just to convince a production company to make the rest of that movie. So so I do like that people are willing to be like, you know what, even if this doesn't get made, I'm going to give it my all. Because, you know, you miss 100% the shots you don't take.
Wayne Gretzky.
Yes.
Subtitle Michael Scott. Yeah, and I am very much more interested in a prequel because the movie opens up so mysteriously with, like, you don't know what's going on. They're like, where's Duckett? And then, bam.
Bam.
All the stuff leading up to that. And if they fucking do what they did with the first one where they end it, like, you know, chef's kiss. That I gave it an extra half star for that fucking ending.
If anything, the ending would be the opening of the opening.
Well, I know, but I'm saying if they end it like they did.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Like... Yeah.
Yeah. If they end it with what we know, but also add that little extra bit in. Yeah. Oh my God.
Dude, that was a very good ending.
I was like, what's, I get it. It took me like a half second to understand what was happening. So yeah, that ending gained it an extra half star. Fucking movie is a very brilliant movie. So you can look out for that. I'm sure sometime, probably next year. Like I said, the film is already shot. So I assume all they have to do is edit, post-production, blah, blah, blah. So that's very exciting because I'm pretty sure that is the first time in A24 history where they've done a sequel. I don't know if A24 has ever done... I'd have to research it. Don't quote me on it.
What's X, Pearl, and Maxine? Sir?
Well, yeah, all right,
those are
fine.
A24.
So then that must be... That was probably their first time doing like a trilogy. But yeah, so this is like... This is new for A24. Usually
it's new, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like one-off movies, but now they're doing sequels and prequels and all sorts of shit.
I mean, they're making big. I mean...
Oh, yeah, let me read this real quick. Since premiering at Sundance's Midnight Section last year, Talk to Me has become another huge hit for A24, grossing a very cool $26 million worldwide, and has blessed the studio with their second biggest box office opening ever since Hereditary. Hereditary was their biggest box office opening. Does not surprise me.
No. And then Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is their biggest movie of all time.
Is it really?
Yeah, it was in theaters. Theaters for literally 7 months.
I was going to say, with all the awards and stuff like that, too.
But money-wise, it is the most profitable movie they've ever had.
Oh, yeah, this was... Okay, sorry, I should say that this was their... What, no, bless...
I guess horror hit, maybe.
Maybe horror. Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, because... I mean,
well, no, I mean, this no, this is opening weekend in general.
So their biggest opening weekend.
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once didn't really hit like that until they got all the awards. Then it went back to theaters, and then they just started
it was in theaters for like 7 months.
Yeah, and they started raking in the money. So very exciting stuff here from A24. Last but not least here, probably the most exciting news for me is that Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher is finally heading to Netflix this October. Mike Flanagan's long-awaited The Fall of the House of Usher is heading just in time to Netflix for spooky season on October 12th, along with some first-look pictures that you will get to see, but I can't really show on a fucking podcast, but you can see.
I already saw them, yeah.
Based on the multiple works of Edgar Allan Poe, The Fall of the House of Usher marks Flanagan's final series for Netflix, following the Gerald's Game director's 5-series deal with Netflix and Intrepid Pictures, because he is now moving over to Amazon. So we were wondering what was going to happen with this, because I knew it was going to Netflix, but we didn't know if it was still going to happen. So thank God it is. But The Fall of the House of Usher stars Flaniverse staples Carla Cugino, Bruce Greenwood, Rahul Kohli, Kate Siegel, and Tiana Miller, Star Wars legend Mark Hamill, and Scream 4's Mary McDonnell also star, as do Carly Lumbly, Michael Trucco, Paola Nunez, Henry Thomas, Kylie Curran, Samantha Sloyan, a whole bunch of other people that I'm not going to read. That's too many people. I did not realize I copied and pasted all those people.
That is a lot of people.
Whole bunch of people. In this wicked 8-episode limited series based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe, ruthless siblings Roderick and Madeline Usher have built Fortunato Pharmaceuticals into an empire of wealth, privilege, and power, but the past secrets come to light when the heirs of the Usher dynasty start dying at the hands of mysterious women from their youth. Bum, bum, bum. Very excited.
I'm a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan, so I was already...
And Kate Siegel with the white hair looks fucking unreal.
Yeah.
I love the outfit, too, that she's
got
going on.
It doesn't even look like her.
It doesn't even look like her. With the white hair, and then we've got, I don't know who that is, but someone. They look great. Someone else. I think that's, no, that's not Carla Cugino. It's hard to tell who that is, because her face is kind of weird.
Bruce Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood. And then everyone sitting together. There's a guy from Midnight Mass, Rahul Kohli, I think his name is. And then that's the fucking red-haired lady from Midnight Mass as well.
Yes.
The one that everyone hated.
Yes.
But I still loved her at the same time because she was so pretty. I was like, you are so pretty, but you're so mean. And then here's the...
That's Carla.
Carla Cugino, yeah. That is such a great fucking...
That's a great poster.
Great poster. So yeah, that will come to Netflix October 12th, and then Flanagan will be starting his Amazon Cinematic Universe, whatever, doing stuff with them.
From things I've read and things I've heard, it sounds like he wants his start to be the Dark Tower.
That's fine. Put him in, coach. He is
Amazon's got the money to make it actually good
absolutely.
Because the movie was not.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Heard the movie's not that great, but...
good actors, not a good movie.
Yeah, Flanagan can do it. I have all the faith in the world in him.
I mean, that's also like he's been on record saying that that's been like his passion project for years. So I know he's going to take the absolute. If anything, it will be his masterpiece.
I'm pretty sure he has a copy of something written for it. I'm pretty sure.
I believe he has the rights for it. I think he's already written a treatment for it. Like
I think I'm pretty sure he's written something for it.
At this point, it's just like, hey, let's do this and get the cast.
Yeah, he also wants to do a Nightmare on Elm Street remake, and I'm like, yes.
Just
let Flanagan do whatever the fuck he wants.
Even Blumhouse is even interested in that. So like if they got that collab, that would be a great collab.
Mike Flanagan and Blumhouse.
I mean, they did that. They did that with
Hush, right?
And Oculus. Oculus was Blumhouse.
Oh shit!
So they've collabed.
Get the team back together. So that is all we have for horror news. Real quick, before we dive into the IMDb roundup here, I did want to do a little history on Elvira, just in case you are unfamiliar with her upbringing. As I was, I had no idea about her backstory. Credit goes to morbidlybeautiful.com and Wikipedia and my own Googling. So, getting into Elvira, her personality is based on an Airhead Valley girl Peterson played as a member of a Los Angeles theater group called The Groundlings. In a 2018 interview with the Huffington Post, she said she was a struggling actress who was working as a waitress part-time. She heard that a local TV station was looking for a horror movie hostess. She was interested since she always loved horror movies and grew up with them. The director came to see her performed and asked her if she could make her bubble-headed Valley Girl character spooky. Peterson put together a look she described as a ghost girl with long sheer and a tattered dress that resembled Sharon Tate in the Fearless Vampire Killers. However, the producers did not like it and said she needed to dress in all black. Peterson and her friend Robert Redding put their heads together, combining an interesting mix of influences. They started with a very revealing tight black dress. Elvira's makeup was inspired by a book on Kabuki theater makeup. Her beehive hair was inspired by Redding's favorite all-female singing group from the 1960s called the Ronettes. They added studded leather bracelets, and boom, Elvira was born. She had a show where she hosted from 1981 to 1986. She had 137 episodes of something called Elvira's Movie Macabre, which is described as, quote, an old-fashioned style horror movie marathon hosted and commentated on by the Mistress of the Dark herself, Elvira. Peterson's Elvira character rapidly gained notice with her tight-fitting, low-cut cleavage-displaying black gown. Adopting the flippant tone of a California Valley girl, she brought a satirical, sarcastic edge to her commentary. She reveled in dropping risque double entendres and making frequent jokes about her cleavage, as they do a lot in this movie, or as she does a lot in this movie. The Elvira character soon evolved from an obscure cult figure to a lucrative brand. She was associated with many products throughout the 1980s and 1990s, including Halloween costumes, comic books, action figures, trading cards, pinball machines, Halloween decor, model kits, calendars, perfume, and even dolls. She's appeared on the cover of Femme Fatale's magazines 5 times, her popularity reached its zenith with the release of the 1988 feature film Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, on whose script, written directly for the screen, Peterson collaborated with John Paragon and Sam Egan. So that is, and she was also like a Vegas girl too. She did like shows in Vegas where she was a dancer and stuff like that before all of this. So,
which is why she kind of incorporated that
into the ending of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was basically the plot of the movie is her to get to Vegas.
To get to Vegas. So, have we seen this? Yes, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. I think this is our second time watching this, right?
Yeah. At least mine. Yeah. Yeah.
Second time for me too. So Elvira, Mistress of the Dark from 1988, released on September 30th of that year in the U.S. We are on to the IMDb roundup here. Rated PG for mild
PG-13. Sir.
I missed a whole fucking number.
You missed a whole letter of numbers.
You fucking guy, the letter 13. For mild sex and nudity, mild violence and gore, mild profanity, mild alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and mild frightening in the 10 scenes. It's a very mild movie. But there's a very there's a very severe amount of cleavage. So just be prepared. And people just groping her.
I think they used the word mild very loosely.
Very loosely. Runtime of 1 hour and 36 minutes, listed as a comedy horror, directed by James Signorelli, who really didn't do anything. Well, he didn't really do a lot of movies, but he was a huge part of SNL. He actually directed many segments and also produced 532 episodes from 1976 to 2013.
Damn.
So, yeah, that's a lot of shit. Written by Sam Egan, who really did not do many other movies, but did a lot of TV shows. And then we have John Paragon, who also wrote 24 episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse and also wrote Elvira's Haunted Hills, which apparently is the lesser good film.
Also, speaking of Pee-wee's Playhouse, rip Paul Reubens.
Yeah, he passed away recently, unfortunately. And I saw that on Facebook and I was like, everyone's just going this year. Like within the past month, I'm just like, can we slow it the fuck down? Too many people. And then also, of course, Cassandra Peterson wrote this as well, who helped write a lot of her shows and movies, which is cool. I didn't know that she helped write stuff until I was doing the little write-up here. And I was like, oh, makes sense, though, because she was a host of a show for a while. So she knows her jokes. And I'm sure she added in a lot of jokes. I'm sure she ad-libbed a lot of shit.
There's probably a lot of ad-libbed.
So much stuff. Produced by 4 people, none of them really stood out to me. However, a couple of them did work on other Elvira movies and TV shows as well. We've got composed by James B. Campbell, who only composed 5 other things that I didn't recognize. However, he was the orchestrator for all 3 Back to the Future movies, Predator 1 and 2, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Mac and Me.
Nice.
The Abyss, Soap Dish, and Forrest Gump. So
Mac and Me, what a classic.
What a classic. If you've never seen that movie, make sure you go watch the, the thing where they riff on the movie. Oh my God.
Riff tracks?
No, not riff tracks. The
Mystery Science Theater?
Thank you. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Cause that is one of the greatest episodes.
I mean, they pretty much are riff tracks.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, so good.
Oh, Mac and Me. I had that on VHS.
Did you really?
Yeah, Jesus. I did. That's how I used to watch it.
Oh man, that movie is definitely something I saw with my eyes. Cinematography by Hanania Bayer, if I'm saying that correctly. Also did the cinematography for Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, Night Patrol, Masters of the Universe, and Ernest Scared Stupid. Here's a fun fact. Never seen an Ernest movie in my life. I don't know if I'm missing anything.
You're missing so much classic awesomeness.
Oh, no.
Disney Plus, I think Disney Plus has Scared Stupid.
All right.
needs to be on your right. list.
I'll watch that. This
the other ones, I don't know where you can get them, but
they're there.
They're there.
All right, movies. Scream Factory. Do we hear a box set of Ernest?
Well, there's Ernest Saves Christmas. He's got one for every holiday. Ernest Escapes Jail. Like, there's Ernest Goes to Camp.
Oh, okay.
Ernest Scared Stupid. There's Ernest for everything.
One for every holiday.
You gotta watch him.
Including Jail.
Yes. Jail, it could be a holiday for
some people. I guess it could be a holiday. 4th of July. I don't know. Edited by Battle Davis, which is a fucking sick-ass name.
Pretty great name.
Who also edited Lethal Weapon 3. And then we've got starring Cassandra Peterson as Elvira. I don't think I need to tell you what else she's been in. I said a lot of stuff already. Then we've got Daniel Green as Bob Redding, which I assume is tribute to Robert Redding, who passed away, I think, before this film.
Yeah.
Who was also in Kingpin as Calvert Munson. We've got William Morgan Shepherd as Vincent Talbot, who has 191 credits and was also in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Last but not least, we've got Eddie McClurg as Chastity Pariah, who was also in The Master of Disguise, that's what I know her from, as Mother Disguisey.
Got a lot of like movies we've seen with our eyes on here.
Random fucking parts of the movie universe. This has an estimated budget of $7.5 million, only grossing $5.6 million, which is honestly, that does not make sense. Elvira was huge at this point. How did this movie not at least make back what they put in? That's really weird to me.
In 88, I guess.
Well, when I tell you the competition, maybe that's why.
Could be, or maybe even though she's been in a lot, like, people still didn't really know who she was. Think about Halloween in 1978 bombed in the theaters.
And now
it's a cult classic.
I was going to say, she was probably part of a very niche part of,
I was going to say. Yeah,
This movie was filmed in L.A. and Burbank, California. You can watch this on Prime, the Roku channel, and Tubi, or just buy the Arrow Blu-ray.
I have it on Vudu.
Oh, there you go.
I don't have the Blu-ray. I just have the digital copy.
Okay, there you go. So, yeah, here. Movies that came out around the same time. The Blob, Mac and Me.
That says Mad at Me.
I know. Shish. A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, Dead Ringers, Gorillas in the Mist, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, Night of the Demons, Pumpkinhead, and Mystic Pizza. Like, damn!
To be honest, it probably was low on the totem pole of movies to be seen.
Especially with Halloween 4, because The Return of Michael Myers, after Halloween 3 bombed so badly, everyone was probably going to see Halloween 4.
I'd say The Blob and Halloween 4 were the big ones. Maybe Pumpkinhead, I don't know. I don't know how well that did it.
I don't know how well Pumpkinhead and Night of the Demons did in theaters. Also, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, that's going to draw people. I know it didn't do great.
So the bigger names probably drew still, $5.6 million with all these movies coming out. That's not
terrible.
It could have been worse.
Yeah, it could have been worse, but yeah. I think Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and Halloween 4 were the draws that year, which is funny. I did not know they came out in the same year.
I was just going to say, that's crazy.
Yeah, the same year and the same month. That's fucking weird. Specific horror moments. There really isn't any. I'm surprised this is labeled horror, but I think it's just because
I think it's just her.
I think it's just her and just, you know,
yeah,
what she's about. But my specific horror moment that I had was when Chastity drug her finger through Elvira's casserole. The fuck, lady, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I've never seen this before. Drags her finger. And I'm like, ugh.
Who does that?
Who the fuck? Like, lady.
Regardless. Like, yeah, because now, and then everybody eats it.
Yeah, then everyone just scoops it out. I'm like, no.
No wonder they went crazy.
Favorite kill? There's only one kill, really.
There's actually two. There's one at the beginning and one at the end. One at the gas station one definitely was. That guy got murdered.
Okay,
guy's dead.
My favorite kill was the food monster that they put in the garbage disposal. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the explosion in the beginning.
Oh, dude, that guy's dead. He died. There's no way he lived.
Favorite character? Elvira.
If you don't say Elvira, are you even watching an Elvira movie?
The fuck? If your favorite character is not Elvira, what the fuck are you even watching this for? Least favorite character for me was Chastity.
I was going to say,
was not a fan.
I even liked the villain more than her.
Yeah. I like Vincent more than I like Chastity.
Like, they're fingering food like for everybody else to eat during the potluck. Like, the fuck, lady?
Get the fuck out of here. Favorite line.
Dude.
I mean, where do we start?
The entire movie.
The entire, every time Elvira opens her mouth.
I think I literally wrote, hold on. I
have three.
I think I have like two or three.
I have three. I came fucking swinging today with my funny reviews.
I literally said so many great one-liners, and then I started writing. I wrote, I think, like six at a time. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna cut this down to two.
Yeah, okay, you got two, I got three. And like I said, I'm coming out swinging. I got a lot of good fucking funny reviews. You've got two, I've got three. I'll go first. It's one of the first lines she says. It's, "Hello, darling, it's me again. Yours cruelly, Elvira. The gal with the enormous looks down at boobs. Ratings." And I was like, yeah, that's good.
Sure, ratings.
Yeah, sure. All right, what do you got?
So, I mean, one that's always in my head, and no pun intended for what I'm about to say, but when the matinee lettering hits her head and he goes, "How's your head?" And she goes, "I haven't any complaints so far." Right, and he's like, "What the fuck?"
That's my third one. Yep.
That's always stuck with me, so I never have to write that down because it's so funny. Because
I haven't had any complaints yet.
I haven't had any complaints. And she goes, "Oh, wait, I'm good."
All right, my second one is, "I need a house in Falwell like I need a padded bra." And I was like, facts.
And then I got Elvira's talking to, I forgot the main guy's name already. But
Rob Redding.
About, you know, introducing himself and how he works for the movies and stuff. And he says, I show a lot of G-rated movies. She goes, "Nothing wrong with a G-rated movie as long as there's lots of sex and violence." And I'm like,
lady.
Yes. Nothing wrong with a G movie except when it's rated R.
Except when it's rated R. Yeah. So close, Elvira. Bob Redding. Sorry, not Rob. Bob Redding. So, IMDb summary.
I still have another one.
Oh, I thought you said you only had two. Oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, two, but I guess three, that's always my head. Sorry. So, this one's more of a visual than a heard. So, I'm going to describe it. So, when Elvira is changing the spelling of the matinee, which she's like, "That's not how you spell matinee," with the E, and she slips on the ladder, the E goes down to where it other letters that U-C-K. And
the duck calling, yeah.
Yes. But because, you know, an E, if you take out part of the E, it looks like an F. And so it was perfectly placed, and her body was perfectly placed to make it look like an F. So in the long shot, it actually says, "How to fuck."
Yeah, how to fuck.
And I'm just like, that's great, for a movie line.
Yeah, and Chastity just fucking faints. She was like, "Oh."
Yeah, and I didn't even catch that the first time I saw the movie, so that was really funny.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
That's it. Okay. But yeah, I thought that was really funny.
No, that was good as well. Because the "How's your headline?" and that is like right next to each other.
They're right next to each other. "How the fuck? How's your head?" I'm like, oh, okay.
It's a good time. So IMDb summary. Upon arriving in a small town where she's inherited a rundown mansion, a famous horror hostess battles an evil uncle and townspeople who want her burned at the stake. Ooh. So, as I just mentioned, I mean, that's pretty much exactly what happens in the very beginning of the movie.
Yes.
It's kind of funny because I remember the first time I watched this, I don't think I had the Arrow Blu-ray yet. I think I was watching it streaming, and I hit play, and it starts like this monster movie, and I was like, was this the right movie?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier in the beginning, where how I watched it on Shudder. Like, that's how she introduces her four, like, movies or whatever.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny because I was like, this is a black and white movie. I don't think I got the right movie. And then, of course, she comes on and says her funny boob jokes. And I was like, okay, there she is. Because then we cut to the booth where they're broadcasting Elvira's show. And the director's like trying to fucking get her to speed up because they have to go to the news, which I thought was weird.
Like, why would you want to? Like, I feel like your ratings are a lot better with her on screen than the news.
What place is broadcasting that and then immediately the news? I don't know what's going on in your broadcasting station, but she says her signature sign off, which she really says on their show, which is "Unpleasant Dreams." And then I love how she just gets whacked in the face with that map of California because they're trying to.
They're rushing her.
She's like, "Get out of here." Oh, God, it's so funny. She gets introduced to the new station owner, who's a millionaire. His name is Earl Hooter. Not subtle at all. And he's like, "The ladies back home call me Longhorn. I bet you can guess why." And she says something derogatory and funny towards him. I can't remember. Something funny. They get into a little altercation where Longhorn just says, "It's milking time," and just like so many men just grab her breasts. I'm like, one, lucky, but two,
I mean, two, fair.
Two, like I get it, but also gross because you can't just do that in real life. It's a movie, so I get why they're doing it.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so I'm just like, the amount of men just grabbing her boobs unsolicited is way too high in this fucking movie. So yeah, she pushes him back and he winds up just busting ass into the news table room. The table
looks so bad. Like, it looks so, the table looks so fake.
Like, what did you set that up from IKEA and miss half the parts? Jesus, that shit just fucking exploded. So she mentions that she has a show opening up in Vegas. She's like, I don't need this fucking horror movie host shit anymore. And I guess that's her agent, because Manny, I guess, yes. Yeah, her agent or whatever. She's like, is there a problem with the Vegas show? And it's like, well, it's a slight hiccup, slight complication. The Flamingo will not go ahead unless you come up with $50,000 to help finance it. And I'm like, that's weird. That's a weird move. I don't know why they need help from her to finance it, but okay. So yeah, they're not going to go on with the show unless she comes up with $50,000. And she's like, I have no idea how I'm going to do that. I just quit my job.
I'm telling you, OnlyFans should have been a thing. Then she would have made it in day one.
Whew. She would have made bank in day one. My goodness. So during this discussion, they get a telegram for Elvira, which indicates that her great aunt, Miss Morgana Talbo, has passed away. And she has left a inheritance for Elvira to claim, but she has to go to Falwell, Massachusetts, which is a far way from California. And I love the fourth wall break that happens right there. Yeah. She looks right at the camera and she's like, that's great. Is that great timing or what? And I'm like, you silly son of a bitch. And then there's a great sequence that you think is real, because she's at the will reading and the guy is like, so she left everything to you. And he's like, let's see what she won. And like rips off his thing and is like, goes into this full game show like host where she's like, you won a brand new Jeep, a sailboat, and money, a whole bunch of money. But then it turns out it was a daydream. And I was like, oh, I really want to hear her win all that. So Elvira's like, okay, tell Manny to call. She's like, all right, Manny, call the Flamingo. We're going to have this money in no time. I'm going to go claim my inheritance. We're going to go to Vegas. Everything's going to be fine. And that's when she sets off on her little road trip to Massachusetts, which is a great little ensemble sequence of all the shenanigans she gets into on the way there, the exploding gas station, the ticket she tries to get out of. And she's like, man, I got to get a better line because she has all these parking tickets. I don't know who's not letting her out of a ticket. Just saying. So, yeah. Great montage getting there. She finally arrives in Massachusetts. Her car is smoking, and the hood decides to...
It just, like, ejects itself.
Forcibly ejects itself.
It literally yeeted itself off the car.
That's what I said. I said it yeeted itself into oblivion. That's what I said. And she clearly does not fit into this very small conservative town, just like she doesn't fit into her dress, like she said. Or like Chastity said. So three boys help her push her car to a garage. She finds a hotel room. And the lady who runs that hotel room is like, we don't have a vacancy. And she's like, well, why does it say vacancy? And she clicks it on to no vacancy. And the fucking husband comes out. He's like, well, hold on. What about that? What if we get this one room? And she's like, Leslie, how dare you? I love their camaraderie between them because...
And at the end of the... He shuts it down. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, he's like, shut up, you old bag. Oh, by the way, we're going to be going into spoilers, obviously. Because, yeah, that's funny. At the end of the movie, when she comes back up to him and says, you know, says, Leslie, she's like, shut up, you old bag. And everyone laughs. Good time.
Good time.
So, I think his name's Leslie, but he's like, I'll show Elvira to her room. And his wife is like, no, you won't. So her daughter, their daughter, Robin, ends up showing Elvira to her room. And Elvira's like, anything fun to do while I'm here? Because like this town looks like it's a bore. And Robin's like, yeah, this town really isn't big on fun, but you can go to the bowling alley. It gets really wild on league night. And I'm like, I bet it doesn't. I'm like, let me tell you how I bet that does not get wild on league night. And it can't get that wild because they don't even serve hard liquor after 8 p.m.
That's another one-liner that's really funny. It's she's like asking for that, and she, the waitress, like, how about a version? And she, maybe later. I'll take beers first.
Yeah, maybe later after I've had a few, then I'll take a version. I was like, Jesus. The one-liners in this are fucking great.
Oh, they're great.
So at the bowling alley, Travis and Billy, who are, I think they're Vincent's nephews or something. They're related to Vincent some way. But we don't know that until later. But they approach Elvira and then just ask her about a blowjob. And I'm like, good God, is this really how men approach women with gigantic breasts?
I mean, if you think about it, she wrote that. So, like, obviously it's happened to her. So she... I mean, it was written by her, so, you know.
And it's probably happened. I mean, but it's just funny how, like, are men really that forward? But I love what she does because she just picks up the beers that they have and just pours them on her crotch. Pours them on their crotch, not her crotch. That would have been a weird move. And then they try to, like, attack her, but she I love how she pokes them with a knife, but it's a little fake knife, and she's, like, laughing about it. And they're like, oh, I bet you thought that was funny. I'm like, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And then here comes Bob Redding out of nowhere. runs over, punches one of them in the face, saves Elvira, who definitely has the hots for Bob, by the way. She sees that happen and she's like, oh, Bob, I have the vapors. I'm fainting. And, you know, unfortunately, though, Bob is completely oblivious to this whole fact because he works at a theater where they can only show G movies. So he doesn't get it. And yeah. I'm like, buddy, she has got googly eyes for you. Pay attention, guy. So later at the will reading, Elvira shows up and makes everyone uncomfortable, of course, because she does not fit into this town. I love how the housekeeper and the driver of the aunt get $10,000 between the two of them and a car and like some like silver tea set. I was like, wow, you guys made out like bandits. And then Elvira gets the house, a poodle, and a precious book of recipes. Unfortunately for her brother Vincent, he gets the rest of her estate and holdings, but there's none. So Vincent gets fucked.
Yeah.
And we find out later why. Later in the car, we see Vincent, who was the brother of the great aunt, mentioned to the two guys we saw, you know, antagonize Elvira at the bowling alley, Travis and Billy. And he's like, I must get that recipe book. It contains power beyond your feeble minds or what your feeble minds can imagine. So obviously something in that recipe book is very cause for concern. And we don't know why until so much later in the movie. But he needs it. He runs into Elvira and is like, hey, I'll give you $50 for that fucking recipe book. And she's like, yeah, I'll do that. I need money. And, you know, she's trying to also sell the house. And what's his name? Mr. Beauregard or Mr. Bigelow or whatever is the guy who was reading the will. And he's like, you could probably get like $50,000 to $70,000 for this. And she's like, oh, perfect. Great. Let's do that. And he's like, you could probably get more if you fix it up. Are you interested in doing that? And she's like, well, I guess. And that's when all the town's boys show up. Trying to peep at her.
Yep.
And she catches them and she's like, why don't you come back in the morning? Because they mention like, oh, don't you need help like fixing up your house? Like, yeah, whatever. So, you know, they come back the next day and they start helping. And then suddenly just more and more boys start showing up. I'm sure it had nothing to do with how big her boobs were.
It definitely wasn't her milkshake.
Definitely was not any part of that. And they start, you know, we get that classic 80s montage of cleaning up and getting stuff done.
She would definitely make me do manual labor.
Yes, for free.
I would just be there.
You can pay me in lemonade and just look
visuals.
Just visuals.
Just,
it's fine.
Just visual stimulation is all I need.
It's fine. And the house ends up looking like a multicolored bat out of fucking hell.
which you would think like someone who's all like spooky and stuff would hate that, but she's like, fucking, I love it.
I love it. And then we're introduced to Mr. Harold Gotter, who is the real estate agent that wants to help Elvira sell the property.
Who always plays a weird guy.
He's a weird guy.
Like, I mean, like I can't.
All the time.
Every time I see him, I'm reminded of him playing the sheriff in Scary Movie. Yeah. So yeah. Fucking weird.
He's such a weirdo. And he comes on to her immediately, just like every other guy does, and she throws him out. She's like, I know my house might be cheap, but I'm not, or something like that. Another great one-liner. She tries to have an open house, but that doesn't go well. No one shows up, so getting rid of this house might be harder than she thought. And, of course, Manny is freaking out, like, hey, the flamingo's breathing down my neck. We gotta fucking, you know, we gotta give them the money. And she's like, I'm on it. Don't worry about it. Tries to find a job to no avail. Nobody wants to hire her. And that's because Bob tells her that Chastity, who is like the, what is she, like the fucking mayor of the town?
She's something.
She's something. But she pretty much has it out for Elvira and is basically telling everyone to not hire her, don't associate with her, we need to get her out of town, she doesn't belong here, blah, blah, blah. And this is when a very important part of the movie happens, because spying on Bob and Elvira when they're doing that whole little scene that you love and I love with the marquee, Vincent, from his second floor fucking office and whatever he owns bank, goes into this fucking secret chamber behind a bookshelf and goes down in a little elevator that he has. He's saying spells and mentioning this lunar eclipse and trying to speak to Morgana, who I guess is still around because there's wind that kicks up and he's like, I'm dead, you're not, wahaha, you know, like I'm gonna get the book and demolish evil or whatever the fuck he's doing. So, you know, Vincent obviously wants that book because he's some sort of, I guess, what is a male witch? A Wiccan? Is that what that is? Let's go with that. A male witch, a Wiccan, right?
Wiccan is just a person who is a witch. It doesn't matter if it's male or female.
Damn it. Well, a male witch, a wizard, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be wizard. I feel like that's...
So, yeah, you know he's into some shenanigans, for sure. And
basically, Vincent needs the Van Gogh. Thank you. I'll be here next time whenever I'm invited.
I'll be here till next Thursday. Yeah. So essentially at this point in time, no one's able to associate with her. Even the principal of the local school has told all the children that, well, not children, but all the, I think they're high school students that were helping her fix her house. They're like, if you are caught with her, you will be expelled. But, you know, Elvira.
Expel me. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. But Elvira, you know, she's trying to put on a fun little movie for everyone in town because they only play G movies. And she's like, I've got a whole collection of films in my trunk that she goes to get, and she puts on this show for everybody, like, you know what she does with her movie Macabre. She sits on stage and she's commenting, and they're watching this terrible movie, and she really teaches that town how to have fun. The kids are hooting.
They're watching one of my favorite terrible movies, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yes
I love that fucking movie.
Yes. And so they're all having a good time. She even does a wild dance at the end where she's doing backflips, and that whole scene where she does a flip and the camera pans to her. I'm like, you're not doing that.
Oh, no, that was her body double.
No, that was just funny. And when she's at the end of it, she's supposed to get dumped a whole bunch of gold glitter on, but Patty, that bitch from the bowling alley who hates her, son of a bitch, she ends up switching out the gold dust for tar. Feathers. And, of course, Elvira's not happy about that. And they go, you know, Bob and her go back to the house. She's trying to jump his bones, and he's like, I don't understand you, lady. And I'm like, just give in. Just let it happen. God, shut your mouth and let it happen. So she's like, I'll whip you up some food. And she finds the recipe book in the couch because she kind of stumbles onto it. She's like, oh, there's that recipe book that Vincent wanted to come get earlier for $50. But she couldn't find it because the fucking dog hit it, which was great. The dog is named Algonquin, but she renames the dog Gonk.
Which is great.
Which is a great name. And she gives it a haircut and like all this fun, like, colored hair. It's hilarious. So Gonk hid that recipe book that she eventually finds, and she goes to cook this thing that ends up turning into a monster because she goes to feed it to Bob, and she opens it up, and this fucking great practical effect pops out. It's a really good time. And he's like, where did you learn how to cook? She's like, I didn't. I just found my aunt's recipe book. But don't worry, she did put Cheese Whiz on top of it. So I was like,
and chips.
I wanted to be that bag of chips. I'm just saying, if you've seen the movie, I just wanted to be that bag of chips. I'm just gonna go ahead and throw that out there. So yeah, that didn't go well. And after that debacle, Gonk picks up the recipe book again and runs away with it to a part of the house we've never seen, which is like up in the attic. And eventually, Elvira comes across this trunk. And there's an envelope addressed to Elvira in there. And we're like, uh-oh, plot details, here we go. And then I'm going to end it here because you just got to watch the movie if you haven't seen it. I don't want to give away everything. But the letter inside goes to say, I wrote it down verbatim, bear with me.
Nice.
Dearest Elvira, for all these years, I protected you from the truth, but the time has come now when the only protection is the truth. Your mother, Devana, was an extraordinary woman. She was the true mistress of the dark, but her power did not go unchallenged. For 300 years, your great-uncle Vincent coveted her dominion. He would have destroyed you as he did her had I not sent you away. I left you with all the power you would need to protect yourself and entrusted you to a loyal familiar. But it wasn't you alone that I was trying to protect. It was the book that contained your mother's magic. Our enemy is a formidable one. Protect the book, Elvira, and above all else, keep it from Vincent when the moon falls under the earth's shadow. Remember, you carry the power with you. Your loving great aunt, Morgana. So yeah, you find out that her great aunt and her mother had a plan for Elvira the whole time, and they were that's why she is part of the will. But it's funny, I wonder why the envelope was in the trunk. Why didn't it get sent? You know, they don't explain that at all. It's really my only problem with the movie. It's like, okay, why didn't that get sent to her? Why is it hiding in the trunk? Like, did Vincent stop it? I don't know. So there's actually really good plot details in this, to be honest. The plot is actually pretty fucking awesome. Once you figure that out, she knows now that she cannot give Vincent the recipe book, that it contains everything she needs to stop him. And they do have an epic battle later in the movie. It's pretty awesome. And then eventually the town forgives her for everything, blah, blah, blah. So this is such a great movie. It is extremely campy. It's extremely funny. It is just, like, I don't know. It's just a fun time.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 100%.
It is so goddamn funny. Her one-liners are great. There's other great comedy in there as well, but she seriously is the driving force behind this movie it makes sense. It's Elvira.
Her timing's amazing too.
Her timing's amazing. Her delivery is great, and she is just such a fucking treat to watch on screen. So yeah, I don't want to, you know, there's plenty of other good parts about this, and there's more stuff that happens, but I'm going to leave it there with kind of like the climax of the plot details with, you know, her finding this out and like, okay, I can't give this to Vincent. And then there's so much else happens too. So much else happens. But I'll leave that up to you to watch if you haven't watched it already. Typically, we would spoil the entire movie, but you know what? This is something that you should just experience if you have not watched it. Let's go to taglines here. Elvira busts out in her outrageously funny first...
God damn it.
Yeah.
Busts.
Elvira busts out.
I see what they did there.
In her outrageously funny feature film debut. And then here comes Elvira. There goes the neighborhood. Love it.
Good ones.
Trivia, Elvira's macabre mobile was created for the film. The 1958 T-Bird hardtop was purchased for $2,500. Went through $7,000 in alterations. The automobile remained in the possession of Cassandra Peterson, who occasionally used it for personal appearances, but she frequently complained that that although it looked beautiful, it never worked well. In December 2021, Peterson auctioned off the steering wheel, license plate, cover, hood, and dashboard ornaments for a total of $19,795. So not even the whole fucking car. It's a good time. The Anchorwoman, played by Tress MacNeille, is based on a real Anchorwoman Cassandra Peterson did not get along with during her days at a local television station. Cassandra Peterson wanted Tim Burton to direct the movie, but by the time production was underway, he was very busy making Beetlejuice, makes sense.
Tim Burton would have been a great director for this movie.
This would have been a very different movie had it been Tim Burton. But I'm not saying it would have been worse, but it would have been a lot different.
Look-wise, tone-wise, maybe not.
Look-wise.
Yeah, aesthetically, it would have looked different.
But, joke-wise, I think the jokes would have been the same.
I think everything else would have been, because, I mean, if you think Beetlejuice, was kind of on the same part of, like one-line comedies.
Yeah, it would have looked totally different. One of the most problematic issues with Benny, a temperamental poodle that did not seem to like anyone except his trainer, the dog had trouble hitting its marks, did not perform properly, and actually attacked actor Kurt Fuller's ankle, leaving the actor with long-lasting scars.
Wow.
Thanks, Gonk.
God.
Cassandra Peterson had a cameo in Pee-wee's Big Adventure in 1985, so she invited Pee-wee actor Paul Reubens to do the same in this film. But this became unfeasible when his sequel, Big Top Pee-wee, 1988, went into concurrent production, so his cameo came in the form of a Pee-wee Herman doll in Elvira's dressing room. So,
still works.
Yeah, still works. Goofs, nothing of interest, rated 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb and a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd, has a 56% on the tomato meter and a 65% audience score. I gave this a 4.5.
I gave it... when I first watched it and this watched the same rating of a 5.
I
thought it was
shit.
Absolutely perfect.
Oh shit, that is a Frightmare certified slap. That's what I'm talking about, baby. All right.
I hate that.
Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have Scary Movie, Scary Movie 2, Stan Helsing, Saturday the 14th, and Army of Darkness.
That all makes sense.
Wildly all over the place.
But they're all making fun of other stuff or just slapstick.
Similar movies according to IMDb, we have Elvira's Haunted Hills, Elvira's Movie Macabre, which is a TV show, Netflix and Chills with Dr. Elvira, which I believe is also another show, and 13 Nights of Elvira, again.
Elvira.
Yeah, just Elvira. Have you seen Elvira?
Have you not seen Elvira?
Have you heard of Elvira?
I've seen parts of her.
Oh my God. funny or bad reviews. I focused on the funny reviews, and boy, do I have 6.
So
I came fucking swinging.
Oh, I got 2, but that's only because I spent 20 minutes and most of the reviews were all about like
boobs.
Her appearance or why some women are not lesbians, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, understandable. But that's already, I don't need to say that. We already know. Like some people are like, this is why I'm the way I am. Like, this is why I like goth girls. I'm like, okay. Like, these are things that are already, you don't need to be said. We understand that.
That's
fair. So I was trying to look for kind of like out-of-pocket ones.
All right. Well,
and it took me 20 minutes, and I'm just like, screw it. I found 2.
Let me do a couple here, and then we'll go to you. So from All Minor from Letterboxd, 4 stars from Alexandria Barron. She's just like me for real. I also have big boobs and no shame.
I like her already.
Another one from Morg Salad. 4 stars. breasts boobed boobedly.
Yeah, I saw that one too, and I'm like, I mean, that's funny, but like, it's obvious.
All right, go ahead. What you got? Give me your first one.
So this one's 2.5 stars. If you took a shot every time Elvira muttered something perverted under her breath and a local townie didn't quite understand it, you'd be dead of alcohol poisoning in the first act.
Yeah.
Facts. Those are pretty facts.
All right, here I've got 4 stars. Or no, sorry. This one I only included because it confused me. So 3 stars with the heart. So that's a good rating. This movie was just terrible. I loved it. But, like, I don't get it.
Oh, no, I mean, it's just like how I, either Meg 2, knew exactly what it was. It wasn't a good movie, but I loved it.
Okay.
So kind of like, it's so bad, you have to like it. Like,
all right, yeah.
You know, like Evil Dead, Army of Darkness. Like, some people are like, this movie is so bad, but I look Sharknado. That's what it meant.
Yeah. 5 stars from Magdalene. That's Mother.
I mean, fair.
All right, what's your next one?
All right, 3 stars. This wonderful B-horror film taught me you can make a crock pot of LSD to win a whole town over. And I'm like, oh my God. That's one of my favorite scenes in that movie, too.
What was that? Because that was the pot that Elvira brought to the potluck. And everyone who ate it just, I thought it was going to be like they were all high. They were all just
wickedly
horny.
Yeah, honestly,
it turned into an orgy of fucking.
Like when Chastity literally was like, is this scene taken? I was like, how did this get past the PG-13 rating? That's holy shit. But the 80s.
The 80s, yeah.
But like how she said that, she's hiking up her skirt and he's laying there. I'm like, what the fuck? Dude, my jaw dropped the first time I saw that movie. Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch?
And then she blames him later at the town meeting.
And I'm like, you sat on his face,
like, lady.
Like, what the fuck?
All right, two more here.
I was dead.
5 stars from Silly Billy 42. I watched because she was hot. I finished it because she was mommy.
Oh. I mean, fair.
4 stars from Internet Girl Zero. She really does have some impressive bitties.
So I reviewed it this time too, so I'll give my review. I just 5 stars, smash. That's it. Simple yet to the point.
I will review it. I will review mine as definitely not a pass.
No, definitely not.
That will be a concurrent review with your smash.
Or I don't know if you've ever seen that the show Modern Family, but there's a scene in there where Sophie Vergara goes to, I already forgot his name, but the actor who plays Al Bundy.
Oh, Ed McNeil?
Ed O'Neill. And she goes, do you want to take a shower with me? And his response is literally, honey, there's a gun in the locker in the closet. If I ever say no to that,
shoot me.
And I'm like, yep. 100%. That's the best way to say smash. That's the best,
yeah, if I ever say no, just
if I ever say
fucking
not, just
shoot
use
me.
It.
If I ever say no, it's not me. An alien has taken over my body.
Yes.
And doesn't know who the fuck I am. All right, my review will just say C. Spencer Lafferman's review.
C. Slafferman's review.
And they'll go there and say smash. I'm like, ah.
Yep, that's good.
That's good. Oh, goodness. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is staysspooky@outlook.com. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, make sure to give us a review or a rating, whatever you want to do. You can also personally follow me on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are
Slafferman,
the best. Next week, me and my buddy Michael from the Shameless Picture Show are going to be doing a monster movie featuring Robert De Niro. Oh, yeah, baby. So until then, stay tuned and
stay spooky.